I'm not going to tell you.
Okay, this is Beth Dean and Eileen O'Malley for the Washington County Museum, recording an interview with Melvin Van Domlin on October 4th, 2012, in his home in North Plains. And today we are talking about the Bracero program and some memories that Mr. Van Domlin has of the Braceros. So can you tell us what you were sharing about the years that you recall a camp in Chute Park?
At Chute Park?
Yeah.
Well, I was in a 4-H club, and I had to be 10 years old to go to the fair. And so this would put the year about 1942, 43, along in there. And at that time, they only had the county fair for the youth, the 4-H and FFA members, and the rest of the buildings were not used for fair activities, but they did have a program set up for Mexican laborers coming up from Mexico and staying in these buildings. And we were told to, you don't go over there and talk to those guys, but the distance between the two buildings was about 35 feet, and there was no barrier in between. And so every evening they would come out and they'd play their guitars and sing a song there when it got dark at the end of the building. And so we got to where we would go over and sit down with them, and they gave us some treats. I can't remember whether it was candy or cookie or what that was. And they'd sing us some songs. And later on, I think they were, how many years they were there? 2 years, I imagine. It was a seasonal thing, maybe 3 years. But when the program was over and they returned to Mexico, the fair continued after the war was over, but the upstairs in one of those buildings still had the cots or the bunks made where the laborers had slept. And they were very crude things. They were like just 2x6s nailed out from the wall about 3 feet. And I know they were too high because I slept in the second bunk one of those years at the fair. And they had like chicken wire on the bottom, kind of a hammock style. And they were just, one roll of chicken wire went the whole length of the building. But they, everyone dropped off into individual bunks. So I know those were still up there the first year they had the fair after the war, because I slept in one of them.
Was it comfortable?
I can't remember. when you're that age, you can, tired enough, you can sleep anywhere. But that...
Do you remember how long the building was?
Oh, they had two long buildings there with, one of them was called the Grange Building, one of them was called the Farmers Union Building. Buildings both had an upstairs in them, had wooden floors. They were at least 100 feet long, each of those, maybe longer, maybe 150 feet, but the building where I slept in the bunk was probably more like 70 or 80 feet long, but it was a more substantial building. It had a cement floor, two floors in the building. Had an outsized stairway. So how much of these Grange buildings and the Farmers Union buildings they used? I know they used the Farmer Union building because that's where we went over and listened to them play the guitars. Now, whether they were in the Grange building, I don't know. I suppose they were.
Now, can you describe, you've already shared with us, but can you describe where the camp was located and what is now or in Chute Park?
Oh, it's on the west side of Chute Park. I think at that time it was county ground, but now the location of the Hillsborough Senior Center and the parking lot. And when the fair took place, there was also a vacant lot across the street to the west where they set up some tents and the machinery dealers would put in displays and things over there.
How can you describe sort of I think you said that there was a labor shortage, or can you describe what was happening at that time, 1942, during the war? What was your family doing at the time?
Well, we had a farm at Mountaindale. I had two older brothers. One of them was still in high school when the war started. And the older one, he could never get drafted because he had a, what they call a perforated eardrum. He had no protection against blast or explosions. And it was kind of comical because every 6 months he'd get a notice to apply for, come in for a physical examination. And he knew they weren't going to accept him, but he had to take a day off. He worked in the shipyards as a welder. He had to take a day off to go in and say, yeah, your ear's bad. My other brother graduated from high school, and he stayed home about a year and took care of the dairy while my dad was working in the shipyard. Everybody was working in the shipyard. They'd hire anybody. And I always talk about a little dwarf we had in the community. His name was Waldy Chance. And he was highly valuable down at the shipyard because he could go places nobody else could. And I've heard stories about him tying ropes on Waldy's feet and sending him down through a tube until they could pull him out. So my brother eventually enlisted in the Marine. So that left my dad, my mother, and myself on the farm. And she would go out and sow sacks on the combine when he was harvesting. I have pictures of him. And I was driving tractor when I was 12 years old. One of the happiest days of my life was when my father told me I was old enough to stay home and help him and I didn't have to go pick strawberries. And everybody seemed like they had strawberries up the valley or all around. Just everybody had strawberries. And you'd see them in the afternoon. They'd go down with a trailer load or they'd have them in the trunk of the car, in the back seat of the car, or a small trucks. And then there was some really, really large growers, too, and that's where the labor problem came. They would let school out early just for the kids to go pick strawberries.
Now, what happened? So if there was no one to pick strawberries, did the strawberries go under, or what crops became more prominent during the war?
What happened to the strawberries? I don't know what happened. It just there's very few fields around now, just a couple of big growers grow them. But it was just something, this ground, the hill ground seemed to be real good to grow berries for some reason or other. It was a real good berry ground.
Do you remember what crops were being grown during World War II?
The what?
What crops were being grown during World War II?
Well, our farm was just like a general, it was like pasture land and hay and grain. That was about it. The government was buying Austrian field peas for 5 cents a pound, and my dad thought that was just really good, you know. He was really making money growing those field peas. They were a dry pea. They grew out and usually planted oats with them to hold them up off the ground, and you combine them just like a wheat crop or an oat crop, but they were dry peas. And I don't know, they were using them for cover crop somewhere, I think.
Now, you had mentioned flax. Do you have any other memories of flax production?
Only time, most people south of Cornelius, they had a flax plant out there. And I think the idea was to get material for parachutes. The government was behind that, growing flax. And they had to soak it. I talked to somebody the other day, it said they had to soak it to break the fibers down. Mm-hmm. But my father, the only flax he grew was for the seed. He was growing seed for the to plant the flax.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other memories of just what was happening during World War II? I mean, you said children were getting out of school early.
Oh, yeah, and then we'll never see this country so united as it was at that time. We never will. Everything was for the war effort. And we had old paper drives, and it was a Save Your Lard for musicians. I don't know if you ever, munitions, Save the Lard, and the toothpaste tubes, all that kind of things.
What would you do with toothpaste tubes?
I think there was some lead in them yet in those days.
Right.
They didn't know better.
Turn your little toothpaste tubes into bullets.
Yeah, that was the deal. You had to save your toothpaste tube.
Had you ever heard the word bracero?
Oh, yeah.
You had, okay.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's something that people were using during the 40s, or is that a word that you learned later?
Probably learned later,
yeah.
Yeah.
We're just trying to, one of our other questions is if
the Mexican men were in the community at all, or if they were just at the camp, or what the relationship was like with the...
We never saw them. You know, wherever they went, they just weren't in the population, no. They stayed to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Do you have other questions? The memories of the men. Can you talk about that a little, about the singing?
Do you remember anything more of it?
A what?
Do you remember anything more about the singing or how many men there were? Or?
No, I have no idea. Those buildings could have held a lot if they used all of them. But I don't know how many they had in there. Somebody must. I mean, there must be some record or something.
Mm-hmm. Were they friendly to you?
What?
I know some of the stuff you've told us, we just want to get it on the tape that you about how the men behaved toward you. And you mentioned we. How many, you and some of the other boys, how many other kids were with you?
Oh, probably half a dozen of us went over there. That's about all that was in our little club. We had about that many in our 4-H club.
Uh-huh. And the men were happy to see?
Yeah, it seemed like they were mostly older gentlemen, and they were just seemed like they just wanted to, you know, associate with us, you know. I think they were homesick or missing children.
Could you tell, besides they had guitars, did they have anything else that you could tell?
That's all I remember. And they would sing. They would sing a little, whatever. We couldn't understand it, but they would.
Did you like it?
Yeah, that's sure. It was great.
Pretty songs or whatever?
Yeah, it was neat.
Did that leave you with a good feeling about Mexican workers? Or did it just sort of seem to sit there?
Yeah, we were kids, but, you know, they were kind to us and just seemed like they wanted to share something.
Is there anything else that you want to add to the...
No, I don't get it. I guess not. I don't...
Oh, I was going to ask you, since we're still doing this, you had mentioned the strawberry fields, and we know that Japanese families were big berry farmers prior to the war. Do you remember anything happening with the Japanese population during the war?
Well, yeah, we had the possessions of one family stored in our attic. They would come around about a week ahead of time and say, in a week you're going to take you off. All you can bring is what you can pack. And we had possessions of one family in our attic all during the war. But my parents told me I couldn't talk about it because some people were so upset about this that they label you sympathizers, you know. But one thing that really, I've looked into a strawberry field up. I did a story for the Beacon, and it involves a Japanese family that was tending berries up on a hill. And so I actually picked berries up in that strawberry patch when they were gone. And in the house where they were living, there was all these books and magazines and stuff, and what used to be a wine cellar. But you think about it, and these folks were up there. I don't know whether they planted those berries or not, but they were tending them. And here was their crop, you know, coming on that spring. They were hauled off. There was the crop.
Now, do you know if that family came back to get...
I don't know if they came back, no. The one that we had the possession in the attic did. But,
oh, they did?
Oh, yeah. They were the Minamotos on Mason Hill. That's where they lived.
And they settled in the area again?
I don't think they resettled here, no.
But they got all their stuff back from you guys? Or at least...
Well, what was at our house, I don't know, you know...
Yeah, we're just trying to get a bigger picture of what the wartime...
The Iwasakis that lived over, pretty close to this labor camp we're talking about, in, you know, south of Chute Park, and their neighbor was Ed Friedenthal, and he took care of their place while they were gone, but they rounded them up and hauled them off. They came back to be a very prominent family in the nursery
business. Iwasaki?
Iwasaki's, yeah.
Iwasaki's. They have a nursery, don't they? Like on Minter Road, I think.
They got several places. Yeah.